You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 121 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington, the home of the Peltoncast.
Hello.
Good to be back.
Oh, it's good to be back in Boulevard Park.
And can you believe it? As this podcast comes out, we are one day away from the Peltoncast live at Barboza on Wednesday night.
Wow. I don't know if I'm ready for this. Because
I know that I'm not ready for it.
You definitely are not ready.
I got some work to do.
We have so much planned. That's why I'm not ready. We have planned, if you can believe it, the crowning of the champion of our search for Seattle's best burrito slash taco. My digestive system is ready for me to not eat that many more burritos and tacos with third Pelton brother Jake One. We have Talkin' Taco Time with special guest DJ Infrared. We have the triumphant premiere of Trader Bros. We have, if you can believe it, surprises, special guests, and a Seahawks season preview with our good friends over at Beast Pod, or at Tasteful Profanity, a Beast Pod production.
And we have Come Hungry.
Come Hungry.
So what time are doors?
Doors at 7:30. The show will start at 8. The Rainier Tall Boys will be flowing.
They sure will be.
We should... I had an idea that's probably not legal.
Okay. Good.
It's like, maybe we should just sponsor a bucket of Rainier Tall Boys that are out. We just put down like $40 or something of Rainier Tall Boys. All proceeds also going to Doug Baldwin's, what is it, is it nonprofit called?
Well, they're going to the foundation to build the clinic. Why would you bring that up? Don't bring that up now. We're not prepared to talk about it.
Okay.
That was a bad idea.
Bucket of Rainiers is a great idea.
Cutting this whole thing out.
Which part? The bucket of Rainiers?
Yes.
Okay. Wait, so what was the last thing you said? The Rainier Tall Boys will be flowing.
If for some reason you haven't gotten your tickets yet, log on to soniccentral.com/peltoncast or at peltoncast on Twitter.
Or thebarboza.com.
Find that link. Get your tickets. Join us on Wednesday night. Just $10. So you're going to be missing out on
a
priceless experience.
I'm nervous for all the stuff that we have to do to prepare, but I'm so excited to be out there.
You know what else has been exciting?
What is that?
Eating a bunch of Peltoncast double burgers at Little Woody's over the past week.
As this podcast comes out, you really will no longer be able to get the burger.
Sadly, no.
But we hope that you enjoyed them over this last week. Thank you so much to our friends at Little Woody's who've been super supportive. We've seen them out there when we've been to Little Woody's locations. Thanks to everybody who's gone and gotten them, who's tagged us, who's modified them with Impossible Burgers. We've had a great week eating burgers. I've had like 10 burger patties.
That's about right. It's been awesome. And I've got one more burger coming up
after we record this.
So
there we go.
I'm looking forward to it. We do not have Rainier Tall Boys with us tonight, sadly. Instead, I wanted to celebrate. Apparently, this is year-round beer now. I didn't actually realize that. But I wanted to celebrate the start of fresh hop season by cracking open a Fremont Lush IPA. Because we're going to start seeing more fresh hop beers over the next couple weeks here. And it's very exciting to me. But, quick airing of grievance. Can you believe that a couple weeks ago when I went to Total Wine, there were already fall beers in...
Why is this your grievance?
Because of the
football
fact that it's not...
starting this weekend.
No. Well, yes. I mean, now, this weekend, it's fine. Labor Day weekend,
you have to have beers out in advance. You can't be like, oh, today's the day, all the beer's out.
In mid-August, I do not want to be reminded of the fact that soon the weather is going to turn terrible. I mean, actually, it already had turned terrible probably by that point. So that we're going to go from haze to rain all the time. And I just don't want to be reminded of that. I don't want to think about it.
Always airing grievances about this.
I want to hold on to every last drop of summer.
We are about to get... You're drinking the Lush IPA. You were like, this is year-round. Or this is newly seasonal, right? And I said, no. But you know what is seasonal? The Field of Ferment.
I do know that. Yes.
Wow. And that is some of the best beer that Fremont is putting out. Those hops are fresh.
Indeed they are. All right, well, we should waste no time getting to our third Pelton brother this week because it's a favorite. All right, well, welcome back to the pod. Perhaps the most popular third Pelton brother that we've ever had. My ESPN colleague, who you can see on a variety of programs as well as on ESPN.com and in ESPN the magazine, described by the New York Post last week, is a rising name in the industry. Welcome back to the pod, Mina Kimes.
You know that I will set aside anything for the Pelton cast. In fact, you know how long it took me to get on this podcast. You may remember a lot of begging on my part, a lot of calls from my agent, just turned away over and over. So I'm just glad that you guys accept me now. I think is this my second or my third appearance?
The third appearance. Yeah. I mean, look, first off, we have always accepted you, Mina. Okay. It was just a question of making sure that we had stuff to actually talk about because it was Seahawks season. That was the only way.
Well, we have Puna Ford to talk about today. So this is the only property. You mentioned some of the stuff I do. I'm pretty sure this is the only property where I can talk about Puna Ford. So I'm ready to go.
Not as we found out on Before the Horn, the only property where you can discuss Michael Dixon.
Oh, I mean, that's going to be a national mega story this year. I'm just glad to be somewhat early on it, although obviously us Seahawks punt hipsters have been on it for a while. But I'm hoping to get this like Michael Dixon for MVP campaign going. I got to come up with like a cool hashtag. So if you guys have any suggestions, let me know.
I mean, yeah, MD for MVP probably isn't specific enough yet. So I think you probably got to go Dixon for MVP.
But Dixon is a fraught name, you know?
Yeah.
Like my large adult Dixon. I don't know. Just Dixon. I think punter is probably the way to go, right? Like the heart is a lonely punter. That doesn't make any sense. Anyways, let's talk some Hawks.
You're going to have to continue workshopping those. I thought you were going to say that she was a rising name in the Shaquem Griffin hype industry, but it went straight to Puna Ford and Michael Dixon.
Yeah, please. Show some respect, okay? You know I'm way more inside than that. Come on.
Look, there's enough hype to go around for all these players. Should we start with just kind of your takeaways from the first three preseason games?
Sure. Yeah, obviously I've watched them all. And, you know, after the Vikings game, I was pretty heartened. I'm curious to hear what you guys think. But heartened by what I saw, especially on the first team offense. I think it's definitely too early to overreact to the offensive line. But I watched the Bills game afterwards this weekend. I don't know if you guys caught any of that. I wanted to see Josh Allen's first start. And it's worth watching because it will make you feel a lot better about our offensive line. Holy smokes. We might be approaching average. Just throwing that out there. Do you agree? I mean, I know, you know, if Eddie's had his struggles, but in the Vikings game, again, not perfect, but the first team unit looked pretty darn good.
Okay, this might be jumping ahead too far, but I remember when we recorded this podcast a year ago during the preseason, I had just listened to your NFC West preview on the Bill Barnwell podcast, where you noted that if the Seahawks had an average offensive line last year, that they would probably win the Super Bowl. Like, what do we feel like if the Seahawks have an average offensive line? What's that same thing this year?
Well, it's hard to say because without Earl Thomas, the defense is average at best, in my opinion. I actually probably wouldn't make that prediction. But if Earl comes back, if KJ's thing, which I'm sure we'll talk about, isn't too terrible, if Deion Jordan isn't out forever, and the offensive line is average, then I absolutely think this is a playoff team.
I mean, from the first preseason game, or from this third preseason game, the most recent one, there was almost no other takeaway you could have than to feel pretty excited about the offensive line. I mean, especially after some of the huge gaffes that happened in week two against the Chargers. Mina, is the Seahawks offensive line good?
No, I said average. Don't put words in my mouth, Tristan. I said average. But average is good enough for me. And, you know, if there's anyone who can play behind, and that was another thing. It was interesting watching Josh Allen. I watched actually a few of these offensive lines around the league. There's like, you know, good teams with bad lines. Minnesota, I think, is one of them. Carolina, you know, has crazy offensive line problems. And Russell Wilson is like, I'm trying to come up with an analogy. It's like someone who has lived without eating meat for so long that if you just throw them a scrap of bacon, they go nuts. You know, like he'll be fine with average. Okay. So, by the way, that was another takeaway. Russell Wilson has looked absolutely fantastic. I actually think this is maybe his best preseason to date. Just looking at, like, the accuracy is really there, I think. So that's another thing to be excited about. Put a pin in that. But as far as the line goes, yeah, I think, it's one game, and they had their struggles earlier on. But if they can just maintain that level of decency, I really think this defense can put up some points.
Art, the other part of maybe that rushing success against Minnesota, obviously the offensive line, a big factor in it, but thoughts about Chris Carson's preseason?
I mean, he's a load. Like, I don't know what other word to describe the dude. The way he runs, he just trucks him. And he looks like he did, you know, during the Chris Carson hype period last year. To me, I don't see any decline from there, which is not too unexpected given his injury. You know, it's not the kind of thing that I believe, I'm not a doctor, but I believe it has lasting effects. I didn't love the penny pick before we knew about Carson, just because of where it was and everything, even though I like him as a player. But I understand why they did it. I don't believe this staff has confidence in the health of any of their running backs, okay, at this point, for whatever reason. But if Chris Carson can continue to stay healthy and play at that level, I don't see him giving up that starting job.
No, definitely not. I was reading, weirdly, a fantasy football preview today, preparing for our Pelicancast fantasy football draft tomorrow. And I think it was Eric Carabell who was saying, Rashad Penny is clearly the better running back. Don't worry about Chris Carson. And it was like, Based upon what? Was it the Chris Carson being excellent Chris Carson being excellent for his offensive line every single game he's ever played? I just don't see any reason to assume that Penny's a better back, even to start with.
Yeah, I mean, I like Rashad Penny. Obviously, he's got blocking issues, and that's going to keep him off the field as well in a lot of situations. But, you know, the draft position biases never go away. I think it's really, you have to like outperform your draft position for over, I would argue, 2 years in the NFL before people really trust you, especially when you're drafted as low as Chris Carson was drafted. And when you have that injury, and you know, it's still a pretty small sample size with him, but there's a lot of good running backs on this roster right now. And, you know, we know Davis is injured, right? McKissick, there's some issues with, or is Davis fine now? I can't remember. And CJ Procise is perpetually injured. So I don't know exactly what, I cannot predict what this sort of committee is going to look like every week, but I'm pretty confident that unless Chris Carson gets hurt, he's going to continue to lead it.
Yeah, agreed. How about on the defensive side of the ball? Who's really stood out to you so far in the preseason?
Well, I'm stoked like everyone about Rashim Green. Does he have a nickname? He's got the best, like, 90s look, that mustache. He's got a pretty good Instagram, too. I highly recommend his Instagram stories. They're very entertaining. So, you know, I'm excited about him. I think this is going to be a very fascinating year for Frank Clark because how many sacks did he have last year? 9? Something like that?
Sounds right.
I was like, yeah, it feels like 9, right? This is a year in which he can make himself a ton of money, right? Or not. I mean, that's... sounds like such a stupid binary, but I really believe like he's on a bit of a trajectory, and it's going to be a lot harder for him because, as we know, there's not really a lot opposite him, you know, in the pass rush department, especially with Deion Jordan and the ongoing murkiness into whether he's going to be on the pup list. So I'm very fascinated to see how that plays out. Aside from Green, just like guys who have flashed during the preseason that I'm intrigued by, Jacob Martin, I think, has flashed a bit here and there. I had mentioned Puna Ford earlier. I wasn't kidding, man. Puna Ford is like 5'11 and 300-something pounds. His body type it defies physics. Like, I've looked at it a lot, and it doesn't make any sense. So I love him, obviously. Shout out to Kiara Small, never forget, while we're talking about bowling ball humans. So those are some guys, you know, I'm already, I'd love to hear what you guys think about this. I'm already in the mode of like, let's pay Justin Coleman again. Okay. What a steal that looks like. So that's another one I'm excited about. Not too confident on the cornerback position opposite Shaquille Griffin. So that's something I still, and obviously, you know, with the safeties, we know what the deal is there.
Yeah, you know, someone else who I was impressed with in his debut, Eric Walden coming up with a pair of sacks last week.
Yeah, that's a good one. Is he hurt, though? I think I saw something today, maybe. I don't know, maybe I'm imagining. I just assume everyone's hurt. I mean, you know, they've been throwing stuff against the wall. Mingo obviously had a nice special teams play. We haven't seen a ton out of him. The defensive tackles should actually, in my opinion, be an area of reasonable strength. I really liked the Tom Johnson signing. And then, you know, Jaron Reed, Nas Jones are proven guys. But that you know, we still just need to see like whether they can step up in the regular season as well.
Yeah, the D-line to me is one where if you would have told us going into this preseason that Deion Jordan was going to miss the entire preseason and that we'd come out of it feeling better about the pass rush than we did going into the season, I think we'd be pretty shocked about that.
Yeah, I think it's really, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of Rasheem Green early on. I am very, so the KJ Wright news came out today. I don't know if you guys want to talk about that now, but that's pretty concerning. And I'm not sure, you know, I guess the assumption is that Shaquem Griffin's just going to sub in there, right? And that's scary to me.
Yeah.
He's looked good. He's looked fast. Every time he's on the field, I notice him. But, you know, he's going to have some issues in coverage, and he can't do what KJ does. So that could be a pretty big drop-off.
Yeah, he's going to get tested if he's out there in week one. And, yeah, as you mentioned, KJ Wright underwent arthroscopic knee surgery on Monday. Pete Carroll said that he'll be, quote, back really quick in classic Pete Carroll optimism fashion.
Ash, Justin.
But also added that they would have to get Griffin ready to potentially start in week one at Denver.
That's wild. The fact that it's Denver is a little better, I think. They don't really have – that's not true. I mean, I like, you know, Emmanuel Sanders. I guess – who's the tight end, by the way, in Denver? I can't even name one.
Jake Butt.
Oh, Jake.
Isn't he their starting tight end?
I think he might be, right, because Virgil Green's gone. Anyways, yeah, as far as week one opponents, that's not, like, the most terrifying possibility, okay? But it's still deeply concerning. I saw Pete said Baldwin's a sure thing for week one, which I assume, but it's good to have him speak in those terms. And Deion Jordan continues to be murky. Are there any other like injury guys that you guys are watching for week one with concern?
Yeah, I mean, this Frank Clark situation, him missing practice is not ideal, but there's still plenty of time. So I think those are the main guys that we're looking at.
Yeah, I guess Tedrick Thompson is, they're kind of, that's a little bit of a wait and see situation. Yeah. I imagine by week one, that'll be fine.
Yeah, not as bad, certainly, as it looked when he first went down early in that game at Minnesota.
Oh, you mean when I frantically tweeted, pay Earl, like giant cap? Not that I don't feel that way regardless of Tedrick Thompson's health, but yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even connect those. I just assumed that was because of the...
You wanted to pay Earl. That checks out either way.
Yeah, pay Earl always, yeah.
Am I the only one who feels totally ready for the Shaquem Griffin era? Put him out there.
Totally ready?
Totally ready. We haven't even seen him against ones, dude. Like, he's very fast, but I could, like I said, the coverage could be an issue, and I could just see him just, like, slipping past the QB. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's the optimal position for him, by the way. You know, I think he's a pure pass rusher, so I don't know. Against the run, I don't know. I have a lot of concerns.
Oh, man, I am so ready for this. Nose for the football. He's everywhere. Everywhere there's a tackle, Shaquem Griffin is there.
He is very, like I said, he's super fast, and he is everywhere, but, you know, against the twos and threes.
Good feel for the game. I'm ready for the Shaquem Griffin. If they started the season, obviously Rasheem Green, I think we probably all feel relatively comfortable with being a day one starter or being at least like a prominent part of the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, he came in on the second series last week. I think he didn't actually start the game at defensive end.
Rasheem Green, yeah. I think other than him and Griffin, I'm looking at the draft picks. Is there anyone? I mean, obviously future Rookie of the Year MVP Michael Dixon. But is there anyone else that you guys are particularly excited about in the rookie class that you expect to see? I mean, Will Disley, I'm sure you guys saw that nice block he had.
That was saw, yeah.
Nick Vanna didn't do much for me this preseason, by the way, while we're talking about the preseason. So in my mind, I don't know what the deal is with Ed Dixon. What's his stat? Are they still saying week one?
That actually might be murkier than Deion Jordan at this point. I think we've heard less.
So annoying. Well, in that case, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of Will Disley.
We've seen a fair amount of Trey Flowers during the preseason. You mentioned that cornerback position opposite Quill Griffin, and he's been playing there a lot with Byron Maxwell out of the lineup.
Yeah, what's the latest with Maxwell? This podcast is just basically like me asking about various injured Seahawks and you guys Googling and telling me.
There's a Pete Carroll press conference today where he talked about a lot of injuries, and I don't think he mentioned almost any of these ones.
Right.
But again, screw it. Put Trey Flowers out there. Let's see what happens. Maybe it's a transitional year, but I think he's looked pretty
good. You need to chill with this, like, put this rookie out there. Put this.
Byron Maxwell?
You like, gotta fill your role, bud.
You feel confident with Byron Maxwell there on the other side?
Maybe more than Trey Flowers. I don't right. know. Byron Maxwell looked fine last year.
Yeah, I'm with Meat on this one.
Yeah, I don't know about that. They could have taken, you know, who they could have taken in the first round, all those cornerbacks, whatever. Don't get me started. It's over.
I'm already comparing this draft class, not that I'm getting ahead of myself, to the 2013 draft class, which produced Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, players like that. And I was saying, you know, like Bruce Irvin was the first pick of that class. He was a fine player, but not, you know, like a superstar for the team long term. It's like, okay, that's Rashad Penny. You've got Michael Dixon, who's pretty comparable to Russell. and then also having all of these players who seem pretty ready to contribute kind of right away.
Look, if you were going to take a punter ahead of Russell Wilson, is the Jaguars did. Obviously, Michael Dixon would be that punter.
I mean, it's not every draft class you can get a future Hall of Famer. Like, I don't know what to say. I like the draft class early on, but there's just so many holes on this roster. There's a lot of decisions that continue to leave me questioning. I'll just say that. But like I said, if Earl plays, if the offensive line is average, then I totally think this team is in the mix for the playoffs. So I'm not hopeless like some people.
The offensive line to me is definitely the biggest issue here. And if you give Russell time, the team will be good. The offense will be a top 10 offense if the offensive line is even average.
Possible hot take. I think the secondary is a bigger issue in the context of Earl Thomas continuing to hold out than the
Absolutely.
Offensive line.
Yeah, because Russell Wilson can play behind, you know, four, five street cats. Like, actually, five street cats are probably better than our offense.
Yeah, he's done it before.
But the secondary is a huge area of concern for me. I mean, look at these guys. It's crazy. Like, the fact that, first of all, I wasn't that upset about letting Richard Sherman go. And I caught a little bit of the Niners game. He was only tested once and he had a pass breakup, but I am not super confident in his ability to make a full comeback from that injury, you know? And I think, who do they got week one, by the way? Because I think he is going to get the first team that they play with, like, a good quarterback and a speedster. Okay, let's see. The Vikings. Yeah, so Stephon Diggs, you heard it here. I think he's going to eat Richard Sherman for lunch. Yeah, I love Richard Sherman. That's a tough injury to come back from. So anyways, I'm fine with that, but I mean, God, Tedrick Thompson, Trey Flowers, what? You know, this is it's incredibly concerning. So, I absolutely think there's reason to be concerned about the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, like, relative to what we've come to expect with Hall of Famers in each of these positions. All right, so we know what you think should happen with Earl Thomas. I'm confident we're all on the same page there about what we think should happen. How do you think this situation is actually going to play out?
So at this point, if I had to bet, I think he'll miss like less than three games and then just come back. But the Cam Chancellor situation. I just it seems like the team is not going to get value for him, and at this point, anything below it, like the way I feel about it, I generally feel like people overvalue mid-round draft picks to begin with. Okay, and we haven't had a lot of success there, so you know, miss me with that. Oh, the Seahawks are finding fourth-round MVP. You know, no. So
this feels like a direct attack on Barnwell here.
Well, the Seahawks have changed, okay? We've had bad drafts, so...
Yeah, that's a good play. That's a good play, Michael Dixon.
Yeah. So for me, though, anything below a third, it's not worth it. I'd rather they just play the odds on him coming back and wait it out. So, and I think that's probably what's likely to happen.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. My position is I'm expecting more like the Joey Galloway-style holdout where he's out until the moment he has to come back to avoid his contract tolling for next season.
You think it'll go on? That I mean, that's a lot of money, dude, though. Like,
yeah.
But, you know, there's a big difference between game checks and training camp money, so I don't know. Earl's made, let's see, what are his career earnings? Ba-ba-ba, live Googling. Da-da-da. Okay, according to Sportrack, Earl Thomas has earned... sorry. This is great podcasting from me. Are you guys my... I can't... It's not coming up for some reason. Total guaranteed... Oh, cash earnings. Here we go. Okay. Earl Thomas so far has earned $47 million. I guess he can miss a few games.
I mean, we'll see how dug in he is, but this concern about, you know, not wanting to put himself at risk this season without a long-term deal seems to me to be legitimate.
Completely. I mean, we are all in agreement that they should pay him. The other thing is, like, the market is so soft. What is it going to take? You know, doesn't seem like they've had talks. I can't imagine it would be that much money.
And that's where, I mean, are we sure the Seahawks are actually that interested in extending Earl Thomas?
No, I don't think they are.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if they were at all interested in doing it, I think they believe he doesn't want to play there, quite frankly. And that's from what I've heard, you know. Like that Cowboys thing, I don't care. I really, you know, the him going to the locker room and saying, come get me or whatever. I don't care. I don't care about players and loyalty. I just care about the team being good, right, as a fan. Like, I would rather have the most disloyal mercenary player in the world if he was better than some loyal scrub, right? So I don't care. But I do think that the team does care about that to some degree.
That could be. I mean, I just look at it, and if you're Earl Thomas and you have this core of players that you've been with for the last 6-7 years, and you see in the same game Cam Chancellor go down with what is probably a career-ending injury and Richard Sherman go down with a pretty severe injury that he had to take a much lower contract because of, you know, it makes sense to me why he would avoid playing football without any sort of long-term guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, his body's been through a lot. All those defensive backs, Cam, and obviously the team would take back some of those contracts if they could, in particular Cam's, but I don't begrudge any of them, any of their decisions. I'll just say that.
Do you think there's any chance of Earl coming back before week one?
No, at this point, I can't imagine. I mean, without a contract, right? I don't know. I mean, I was actually thinking about the team and their incentives, and I was looking at the schedule, right? So it goes Broncos, Bears, Cowboys, Cardinals. It's pretty soft first month. So... which I think actually was similar to how the Cam situation played out a little bit. So
I don't think I would classify Green Bay as part of the soft schedule.
I'm revisiting that in my mind, and I remember typing, pay Cam, or where's Cam, or something. So never mind. But I think in those cases, those are certainly not the most potent passing attacks in the NFL. You got the Rams in Seattle October 7th, and that's when it gets hairy. But I think the team probably thinks they don't especially need him that first month desperately.
Do you feel like there's a thinking on Earl's part that, okay, if they see a couple of games, what it's like without me out there, that they're going to come around?
Has to be, right? That they won't want to lose the season. By the way, this schedule is crazy backloaded. looking at it. So, yeah, I do think so. It's hard for me to kind of get that if not that, what's he doing?
Right.
So, we've seen the drop off, I think, in 2016, and he's aware of the guys they brought in and what they're capable of. And I think it's just a classic case of both sides having different views of how poorly that's going to play out.
Right.
Sad. Makes me sad. Come back, Earl. Pay him. Pay the man.
It's been an interesting offseason with regards to that. You see superstar players at really more valued positions like Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack also not getting contracts going into the season. Seems like Donald's close. Khalil Mack is kind of a question mark at this point. And then you have Earl Thomas at a less valued position this offseason in safety. It's kind of interesting what he's thinking going into this. But, I mean, the Seahawks last year went out and got Dwayne Brown midseason because they saw what the world looked like without a left tackle. You know, they were willing to put both money into Dwayne Brown and draft resources because they got desperate at that time. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility of them doing it again.
You're right. And I think the Dwayne Brown, it's actually so funny because I do wonder what role Russell Wilson played in that. Like, at some point, you got to think he goes into Paul Allen's office and he's like, dude, enough. Like, I'm going to die out there. And so it's hard to understand some of the decisions. Like, I think I said on your guys' podcast, I thought they were going to pay Sheldon Richardson. And I'm shocked given how little he got paid by the Vikings, who seem to have a knack for getting guys to take less money these days. I'm shocked that they didn't. So I don't know. Don't you kind of feel like right now Seattle's one of those teams where you're like, where's the money? Like, where's it going? Because, you know.
It's like a drill budget tweet.
Yeah, exactly. But no, seriously, like, I love that tweet. It is perplexing, that's all. I'll just say that. It feels like a lot of average guys getting paid average money and not, I don't know. There aren't that many, like, amazing deals right now on this salary cap.
Definitely. I mean, one of the things we've talked about at times over the offseason, I want to get your perspective, is how our faith in Seahawks management has been shaken by this offseason in particular. Do you feel that way too?
I do, but I always say this on our shows when I get frustrated. I get frustrated by a couple of things. Let's fight the mainstream media here, guys. I'm frustrated by the notion that, oh, now that they paid their quarterback, they can't. Well, no, that has nothing to do with it. Russell Wilson is a bargain, okay? A bargain. So that's stupid. And everyone says that because it's like an easy thing to say. The other thing, obviously it's harder to not have a rookie quarterback, but like you look around the league, you look at the contracts and you should be able to build around quarterback making as little as he makes. The other thing is, you know, just there have been so many unexpected injuries with this team that I really don't think it's fair to pin that on anyone. Now you could say, well, they shouldn't have extended Cam Chancellor knowing what his body's been through, but he had a fluky injury, you know? Same with Cliff, April. Like, if those guys were on this team, this defense would be fine. We wouldn't be freaking out about it. So, again, I don't like that either. And then the other thing is, it's so hard to stay on top of the NFL because of injuries, okay, and, you know, drafts and cap and all that. So I think there are some expectation. There's a feeling where people look at them and they say, you're wasting Russell's window. And again, I don't like all of their decisions, but the idea that it's so easy to keep a team in playoff contention for more than 5 or 6 years is insane. Like, unless you're New England and you have a quarterback who's taking suspiciously low salaries and you play in the AFC East. So I don't know. So to answer your question, it's a long-winded way of saying I don't like a lot of the decisions they made, but I also think that people are being a little bit unfair to them.
Yeah, I guess my concern with the direction of the franchise is that things were going well for a long time for them with a particular strategy and being able a few years where they were able to run the ball really well but actually be an excellent passing team. And then when that ability to run the ball kind of went away, they leaned into it. And I think the way that you maintain being a good team for a very long time, like the Patriots, I mean, they're also in the other reasons that the Patriots have been good One of them being that their schedule somehow seems to be the easiest schedule in the NFL every single season. But the Patriots have been what I would say is progressive and figuring out ways to kind of maximize Tom Brady. They've been able to get the most value out of Tom Brady and have this offense where they're going to score tons of points. Their defense has been bad for a couple seasons in a row, but their offense is just so good because they're good at knowing when to go for it, how much to pass, when to run. And I think that...
And they also do have, when healthy, a historic talent at tight end. He doesn't hurt.
Sure, but I'm saying the Seahawks just... the fundamental strategy of the organization doesn't seem to be this offseason to maximize the value of Russell Wilson.
Yeah, one other thing about the Patriots, too, is that offensive line is constantly overperformed in large part because they have the best offensive line coach in the NFL. And the defense, I would argue they're not as bad as another unit that's overperformed, maybe not to the extent of like a Rod Marinelli unit, but Matt Patricia wrung more out of that defense than he probably should have every year. And that's a huge part of the reason why I know I was joking about the Brady salary in the division, but the coaching is just such a factor in New England. I agree with you. Like it does, you look at these decisions in aggregate and it doesn't feel like they're maximizing Wilson's window at all. I think that's sort of the problem with this whole rebuild or reset question, right? Nobody can really tell how hard they're trying to compete this year. And if that's the case,
then throw all the rookies out there.
Exactly. Yes. Right. Tristan. I personally don't think they think they're trying to compete. They're trying to do both at the same time, which is never easy in the NFL. But we've seen before many teams that has appeared to be rebuilding that surprised. So, you know, when you have one of the four best quarterbacks in the NFL and you still have three or four stars sprinkled throughout the team, I think you're never out of contention.
All right, well, let's kind of return back to where we started. One more preseason to go, and then final cuts this weekend. It doesn't seem likely to be as fraught, perhaps, as the last couple of years when we had the tragic Kaysen Williams cut last weekend that caught all of last year that caught us all off guard on the final weekend. But kind of what position battles are you watching in this final game, and then for what the results are this weekend?
Well, let's start at wide receiver. Because this year is Kaysen Williams, I guess it's David Moore, probably, right? Yeah. So I think they're probably going to carry six. Do you guys agree?
I mean, if they keep Brandon Marshall, it feels like they have to keep six.
Yeah. And I think they are, but you never know. But I just, everything Russell Wilson has been saying about him, it feels like they're going to. So let's say they carry six. So you've got Baldwin, Lockett, Jaren Brown is looking like three to me. So that's the first three. So then the questions are, okay, is it Marshall, David Moore, and then maybe like, and then you get to Amaro Darbo, Demore Stringfellow, Marcus Johnson, Cyril Grayson, Keenan Reynolds, I think are all in the mix for that final spot. I don't really have a preference there, frankly. I think Stringfellow showed a bit. I think that would be more about the mix and what they want on special teams is probably would be the decision they make, but I don't have a strong, Keenan Reynolds had a couple of nice, just kind of, you know, slants in the third game. I could see Russell Wilson wanting him there, but what about you guys? What do you think?
I mean, I don't feel like there's anything that, unless it was David Moore getting cut, that's the only thing that would upset me. I think that probably the organization is going to continue to view Darbo more favorably than we would on the outside.
You're probably right. I know they had Grayson backing up Lockett on those returns, but I don't think that's enough of a reason to keep him because he's not shown anything as a receiver.
And then Moore with that punt return that got called back. True. Last week, but that only adds to his versatility and value there.
Yeah, he's definitely Seahawks Nation's preseason crush. So, but otherwise, the running back position is interesting, right? And didn't they added another fullback, Marks?
Marks, yes.
I made a joke about his last name, but I forget his first name. And, you know, are there any running backs you think that might get a surprise cut? Davis?
I think Davis has done enough to stick this at this point, especially with the McKissick injury. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do with McKissick if he just heads to IR, or, you know, whether they keep a spot for him on the roster. And that may depend on what we see from CJ Procise on Thursday.
Yeah, I feel like they're not ready to, you know, give up on CJ Procise at all. So you're probably right. And I like Mike Davis. I think he's pretty underrated. So, you know, I don't know. I like all those guys. I know it's so corny, but I, you know, there's not like that, you know, like a Robert Turbin type who I think everyone's like, just move on. you guys see Christian Michael, by the way, starting in Indianapolis, probably.
It's hard to miss. Hard to miss.
It feels like it's got to be Mago at this point, right? Am I even saying his name right?
Mago.
Mago. Is it Mago or Mago?
Mago.
It's Mago.
Definitely playing into the Mr. Mago jokes.
That is not a quarterback name. what about, like, would you? Is there anyone around the NFL, like an RG3, who is looking like they might not cut him, but that you'd like to see the Seahawks take a flyer on?
We haven't watched as much preseason football besides the Seahawks as you have, probably. You're going to have a better guess on this.
There's actually one quarterback who's still out there that I wouldn't mind the Seahawks signing. Pretty solid backup quarterback.
Been out of the league last year.
Yeah, he's been around.
Yeah. It is hard watching Austin Davis do whatever you would call that thing he was doing and not think about Colin Kaepernick, that's for sure.
I mean, I feel like if Russell Wilson were to decide to skip a week of football, I don't want to say what would cause him to do that, that they'd probably call him up at that point, because at some point, you know, you just have to be rational because the stakes become so high.
Yeah.
But right now they feel like they don't have to.
I guess so, man. But that would really, then I'd be all in, as the team says. Who else are you bracing for? Like, are there any like cuts where you're like, Puna would be mine. Puna's got to make this team, right?
Would that then mean Shamar Stephen not making the team?
I don't have like a Excel, so I don't know about the numbers. You know what I mean? Like positionally, sure. He's just shown so much, and I don't know. They could probably get away with him on the practice squad, but maybe not.
I think he'd sign somewhere. Puna Ford. If he was out there, he'd definitely get snatched up somewhere.
Looks so good. But he's obviously faced a lot of bias because of the aforementioned unconventional body type, which
I want to call him the Russell Wilson of defensive tackles.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely fair. Completely.
I really think Procise is the one to me where if we were to have a shock cut, he's been so deep in the depth chart. And it's really shown nothing this preseason. I mean, there's either they're just really not thinking that he's healthy enough to be out there, or there really is nothing physically left in the tank for CJ Procise.
Yeah, you're right. That would be it. And they get you can always hear when they talk about him now, like the intense frustration and their voices and Pete's voice. He's Pete's theory. Whenever he says he's hurt again, you're like, oh, you want to kill him? Like, it comes across very vividly. So, yeah, that would be one. I think they're probably going to stick with Vannett, even though I'm over him. Yeah.
It's not like anybody has stepped up to really grab that job.
Yeah. I mean, they're obviously going in a certain direction at the position with Dixon and Disley as well. So I think they want to see either of those guys emerge as sort of a Zach Miller type, which seems entirely possible.
I mean, we'll see what happens. It wouldn't be the end of Seahawks preseason if there wasn't some kind of freak out on Seahawks Twitter about who they cut.
They can't cut David Moore, right? They just can't. It's like, they can't.
I mean, we would have said this time a year ago they can't cut Kaysen Williams, so I'm not going to say they can't cut anyone, but it would be pretty shocking.
Oh, shock of the century. I don't know how I'll recover from that. Oh, wait, how about this one? Reese Odhiambo. Is it too thin, maybe, at guard?
Yeah, well, it's starting to feel like if J.R. Sweezy's not going to be able to play this week, it's how is he going to be able to make the roster?
You're probably right. Yeah. We'll see.
This is probably a bad prediction because the Seahawks always do something a little bit crazy near the end of training camp. But I feel like there are not going to be a lot of fireworks at the end of camp this year at the Seahawks. There might be one small trade for Justin Coleman type or something like that, where they go out and they see value in somebody who's going to be released. I'm sure that somebody will be signed or something. But as far as a player that we feel really strongly about, or a massive trade, I don't really see it with this roster.
I mean, partially because of the fact that, like, the third string just generally hasn't played that well this year.
That's
like,
true. Yeah.
You look at the Seahawks, the six-game winning streak in the preseason they had coming into this year. I mean, that's not usually about your starters other than week three. That's usually about your depth, and they've been really good there in the past, and this year they have not been as good.
Yeah, and I think that was because those the guys who used to be on the second, third strings are now starting. So
right.
Because of the, you know, the starting roster is so shallow. So, which again, part of the, going back to me making excuses for the organization, part of the reason why, again, teams don't stay on top and why these drafts haven't flashed is that a lot of them haven't had opportunities. Like when you're good, players don't get as much of an opportunity to shine. These things are cyclical for a reason. So this will be a make it or break it year for a lot of guys, and you know they're going to have an opportunity to flash in a way that they haven't in 2015, 16, such.
Yes, it was a privilege for us to fall in love with third stringers in the past.
Exactly.
So, Mina, we've seen kind of throughout this preseason the whole gamut of what Seahawks games look like. I feel like each game has felt a lot like a Seahawks game.
Yeah.
All of that said, what are your expectations for the 2018 season?
If Earl plays, I know this is a caveat, so that's crappy, but whatever. If Earl plays, if he misses a month or less, then I think this team should make it to the playoffs, probably, you know, as a wild card. If not, I predict that they will be 6-10 or 7-9, maybe 7-9.
Wow. So you think Earl's worth like three games?
I truly do on this team. You know what I mean? Like football, you know, it's not like baseball where I think it's a lot of it. Like I think because that secondary, as we've talked about, is so inexperienced right now that I think his value, and maybe this is, you know, again, in his mind, his value to me has, despite the fact he's probably not as good now as he was in 2013 because sheer age and injury, his value is probably higher to the organization to me.
Interesting. Yeah. Reasonable take in terms of three wins. I don't think that's a lot to
say. Scary times. Come back, Earl. Pay him.
All right, we got to end on a more optimistic note than this. We haven't really, like, you want to just gush about Michael Dixon for a minute here?
Oh my God, guys, I feel like for me, my appreciation started somewhat ironically because it's funny to be excited about a punter, but my jaw dropped this last game. I mean, I have not seen anything like that. And it was reflected in the sidelines. Like you saw Bobby react. Oh my, like that to me spoke volumes. The defense getting so jacked up about this freaking punter. Like, when do you remember that happening?
Yeah. I mean, maybe when someone makes a hit, that's usually the only time you see it.
Unbelievable. Like Bobby jumped him afterwards. You see that? Like incredible, incredible.
It was like if you drew up what the platonic ideal of what you would want a punt to be, the 2 55-yard punts down inside the five. Those are it. That's it.
Even earlier, before, you know, like in games one and two or whatever, they look so hard to field. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but and I know that people have talked about sort of the style or whatever. But man, like, and as a fan of this team, it doesn't make a three and out better, but it kind of does. Like I'm like, ooh, like it gives you a little bit of like little tiny silver lining.
Yeah, it takes the sting out of it.
Get to see some Michael Dixon. There we go.
Oh my God. So that pick, A++. No negativity from me there. I love it. And it seems like the team loves him, so I'm super stoked on that.
Yeah. All right, well, on that note, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, and hopefully it won't take you harassing me again to get you back on.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to beg, and Maybe we'll have an emergency Oral Signs, a 3-year extension podcast that's just us popping champagne because we're going to be a marginal contender.
I like that thinking.
Average offensive line. All right, guys. Catch you later.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you again to Mina for joining us. As always, Mina, rising star. So happy that she's willing to grace us with her presence on the Pelton Cast. Someday, maybe she'll be part of a Pelton Cast Live.
That would be amazing.
But before we get to crowning the champion of Seattle's best burrito / taco, we have some business to take care of.
We have to figure out who the challenger is going to be. We've known all along since we started this search way back in the spring. I'll have to look it up for the live podcast when we actually began this.
We need stats of how many burritos we've eaten. Okay,
of course. We've known that Tacos Chuki's was going to be in the finals because it's the reigning belt holder. It has the crown as Seattle's best taco / burritos right now. And we need to figure out who's going to contend against it. We've come down to the final two challengers, those being Asadero Prime and El Camion. I've been to both of those locations in the past 3 days. You sadly did not make it back to Asadero, but believe you can evaluate them fairly anyway.
from the 2 weeks ago that I went.
It was more than 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm still pretty capable of evaluating them.
It was a solid 3 weeks.
I went to El Camion yesterday after the Storm game, which we'll be talking about in a moment. And I got the shrimp burrito that everybody was talking about, right? It was raved about. Third Pelton brother Mike Bate said that it was his favorite burrito in Seattle. You talked about how
great
this burrito was.
Although, weirdly, he did follow up on Twitter to agree with Steve Cohen, our third Pelton brother, last week, that the gordita is actually better.
Wow. Maybe that doesn't count as a burrito. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. No, it's not a burrito.
I consider getting – it's gorditas, I think.
Yeah, he said that you could order one individually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's off menu, I guess.
Maybe I should have done that because also I love ordering things off menu.
I thought about that, but I went on Saturday for lunch and then subsequently very before dinner time ended up eating Lil Woody's.
The real sneak at Lil Woody's was getting the Pelton Cast burger, which has fry sauce both on the top and the bottom, and getting a cup of fry sauce on the side for dipping.
That's too bold for me.
You cannot have too much fry sauce, but I had the shrimp burrito from El Camion.
What was your verdict?
I was not impressed.
Wow. I can't believe it.
I'm just going to say, this burrito, I have a couple of complaints, primary complaints about El Camion. Number one, it was about 60% beans. I'm done. In fact, I am done ordering burritos with beans for the rest of my life. Beans are
the
worst.
When you were done or going to eating bar food?
No, this is eating food at breweries. Okay. Which, when was the last time you saw me eat food from a brewery?
That is true.
Think about it. Although supposedly I think Stone Brewery in San Diego has excellent food, like world-class food.
Also, you know where you can go and get El Camion at a brewery?
Where's that?
Hales Ales in Ballard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But that's not the same.
It is not the same.
Anyway.
Sidetracked.
It's like 60% beans. And their burritos, this is true with the previous burrito that I had before, which I think that was Al Pastor. They're not mixed well at all. You get so much. So like the first 10 bites that I had, all beans and rice. I want basically every, and the redeeming quality usually of that is you waste some bites. You're like, okay, I've gotten some bean and rice bites, but at some point, I'm going to get to the sour cream guac pico combo plus meat plus, like, you get one of the perfect bites. This is what Chipotle is actually very good at. Chipotle, sometimes you waste a couple of bites if you get the beans and rice, which I'm never doing ever again. But then you get those bites that are like chicken and sour cream and hot sauce all together, and it's one of the 5 best bites of your life. At Asadero, that bite never came.
You mean at El Camion?
Or sorry, at El Camion. At Asadero, it's every bite. At El Camion, that bite never came. There was no, and so the previous one that I had, the Al Pastor burrito, there were these gobs of cheese at the bottom. And I was like, fuck it. Like, this whole experience of getting here, eating 8 pounds of burrito to get to the good 2 pounds was worth it. But for this one, the worth it never happened.
I just could not possibly disagree with you more because of the fact that what I found is there was an incredible alchemy at play here where the individual ingredients fused together.
Oh my God.
Into something that transcended the sum of the individual parts. And I enjoyed the bites, even where there was no shrimp.
In the shrimp burrito? In this burrito. Were we, I mean, I feel like we must have been eating completely different burrito. What location were you at?
I went to Ballard.
To the brick and mortar in Ballard, yeah. Across from Ballard High School. Yeah. Same place, same burrito.
Different people eating.
One with a more refined palate.
Oh, jeez.
I had two burritos yesterday. I had a bacon breakfast burrito from Taco Bell, and I had the shrimp burrito from El Camion. And the best burrito that I had cost $1.
Well, I guess.
Which, by the way, I mean, shouts to Taco Bell breakfast. It's excellent all the time.
Shout out to the forthcoming Talking Taco Bell, which we'll surely discuss this.
Is that a thing? Is it happening?
I think it's happening.
Wait, you really think it's from the Pelton Cast Network?
I'm confident it's going to happen at some point.
Wow.
We gotta find a co-host.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of thoughts about Taco Bell.
So I went to Asadero.
Okay.
On Sunday night. Went to the Ballard location, which is the first time I've been there. Because of the fact that they were open an hour later, and I was going after the Sounders match, which we also will be talking about later in this podcast, and ordered the meat platter for one, which was
the meat.
Just awesome.
When you ordered it, did you say, "I'll have the meat platter for one"?
I definitely did not say that. First off, it's not actually just called the meat platter. It's called the Asada Wagyu.
Is it more expensive at the Ballard location than Kent?
I do not think it's more expensive, but it did not come with the chorizo sausage.
Really?
Yes.
The people of Ballard can't handle the chorizo sausage.
I don't know what to take away from that fact.
So therefore, it is more expensive if you're getting less.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Oh, my God.
At first, I didn't have any tortillas. They didn't. It took a minute for them to get some fresh tortillas out to me. And I was just eating the steak on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Where is this going south?
Then I made tacos out of the tortillas. And the steak.
Freshly made, warm, crisp tortillas, handmade. I don't know.
No, yeah. Look,
I don't know where those El Camion tortillas
again,
are coming from.
Probably
with plastic wrap around them.
The individual ingredients here, incredible. All individually on their own, better than the ingredients at El Camion. The whole, less than the sum of its parts. Because when you wrap the steak in the tortilla and make it into a taco, you're no longer tasting primarily the steak. You're primarily tasting the tortilla. And tortilla can never taste as good as steak. And this is all part of the reason why, with perhaps one notable exception, which we'll get to on Wednesday, tacos have so much lower of an upside than burritos. The best burrito destroys the best taco for me.
I probably agree with that.
And that's why I'm going with El Camion here.
You're just wrong. I mean, I can make my pick of Asadero, but it's not even close. This is a landslide. I'm embarrassed that we have El Camion getting this far. It's not the... Do you think it's better than Taqueria El Him?
Yes. I think that the shrimp burrito at... I will go as far to say that the shrimp burrito at El Camion is my favorite burrito in Seattle. The listener can't see Tristan's shocked face right now. We may have to take a photo and put it on Instagram.
I made a mistake last year, 365 days ago today.
I'm not sure that math exactly.
I was
going to
say years ago, and picked a burger over Loretta's, which
we did it a week later last year. So it's only like 358 days. Give
one
or take.
Year ago today.
Oh no! I guess we did it in the semifinals, so maybe it was this.
Made a mistake. And you right now are willfully making that same mistake. You are putting a lesser competitor forward.
Here's what I'll say. I think Asadero is probably a better restaurant to go to than El Camion. But that's not our task here. Our task is to find Seattle's best tacos and or burrito.
Seattle's best tacos!
No.
They're not Seattle's best tacos. But what you're even saying is you're saying it's your favorite burrito over the baby burritos. At Tacos Chuki's.
I 100% am saying that.
Oh my God. This is
There's a reason I didn't order the gordita because of the fact that the shrimp burrito was that good to me.
Are you kidding me? The second one
was just as good.
Were we eating this? You must have been at a different location.
No. We weren't. We just want different things out of the world. I don't want to get rice out of my...
That's what you want. You want 60% beans, and you want a burrito that's not mixed together well.
I want alchemy.
Okay, we need to talk to somebody who's going to talk some sense into you for this situation. We need to bring in a third Pelton brother here to settle this dispute. All right, so to settle this dispute, which to me seems like it should be pretty obvious, but we'll see what your take on it is, we welcome third Pelton brother for the first time ever, Ben Rodriguez.
The soon-to-be famous.
Ben, talk some sense into this man.
How's it going? yeah.
Your energy isn't where ours is at.
No, I'm full of a lot of El Camión, and previously I had taco time for lunch, so I have a lot of tacos and burrito inside of me right now.
What'd you have at taco time?
Just a beef soft taco. I think at number three.
Have you started exploring, not to get into too much talk and taco time here, have you started exploring adding and taking away from your soft tacos?
No, not really. I usually, when I go to taco time, it's for efficiency and speed. So I usually just hit the value meal and then that's it.
I don't get too creative yet. Next time, just try to get Mexi fries in your soft taco. It's going to change your life.
All right.
It's a game changer.
All right. I'll give that a shot.
Okay, yeah. What did you have at El Camión as you visited today?
So we got the shrimp burrito. We got two carne asada tacos. And then we did the carne asada gorditas. And then we got a cheese quesadilla for the little one. And we kind of ate all bits of it. I would say probably the best thing we got was the gorditas. The fried bread that it's on, it's kind of like half of a donut. But there's like avocado, some cojita cheese. It kind of seemed like there was grilled onions in there too. And it was kind of the standout. I like the shrimp burrito, but the shrimp burrito had a lot of beans and rice.
Hello!
Like the ratio was a little thick, I thought. Like I don't mind shrimp. And all that, and beans and rice, but there was a lot of beans and rice in that thing. For the tacos, their beef is good. If you like your beef kind of like thick and chunky cuts, then it's good. They're good tacos, but I would say, I prefer the beef in my tacos might be a little bit more like, you know, the thin, strip steak cut, you know, skirt steak, real thin. So good. But probably I wouldn't say maybe the best taco I've ever had, but definitely, I mean, it's a good taco. For sure.
And you know where they have the thinly cut steak?
They do. So I would say that
it was Asadero, for the record.
Yeah. Asadero Sinaloa's tacos, as well as their carne asada plate. Obviously the meat is thin. So, I mean, if you had, did you guys have the Vampiro taco at Asadero Sinaloa?
I didn't have it this most recent time. I did the first time I went.
Well, either way, the beef is usually thin cut, unless you get, I think you also had the New York steak tacos.
Yeah, which were excellent.
And is the meat, it's thicker cut, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. You're shrugging at these, you're the worst.
So for me personally, I like the thinner meat, but some people like the bigger meat. Like if you want a lot of meat, then I'd say these tacos are good. But for me, the carne asada plate chopped up and then turned into tacos, for me that's the best taco between the two. Backup would be the Vampiro, but again, I would say Asadero Sinaloa is probably the winner of the two when it comes to tacos.
Do you see it as close if you're taking into account? The gordita qualifies here as well, along with the burrito. We've just determined that the gordita is a cousin to the taco and burrito and therefore is eligible, along with
we'll
of course,
welcome
the burrito.
In anything that's happening at a place that serves tacos and
not
burritos.
Anything. I mean, you can go too far out. Like the mole, we've had mole at some of the places we went to. That doesn't qualify.
But molitas, that's basically a taco.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
I mean, the taco is whatever you probably want it to be, but...
that's certainly the case, given Taco Time's naming conventions.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty liberal with it. But yeah, the gordita's pretty good at El Camión. It's a good competitor. Okay. But again, I think... It would probably be even better if they had Asadero Sinaloa's meat in though.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It's good.
So overall, to settle our dispute, I voted Asadero, the Asadero family. He voted El Camion.
I don't believe they're named Asadero.
No. Just the Asadero family of restaurants. Okay. Asadero Ballard, Asadero Prime.
I mean, yeah, they're going by Asadero Prime at this point. That's what the website is.
Ben, what is the winner of this round and the restaurant that will face Tacos Chuki's in the championship?
I'm definitely going to have to give it to Asadero
Sinaloa. Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
There it is. Finally, a voice of reason chimes in here. Somebody who recognizes that the shrimp burrito is like 60 to 80% beans and rice.
Yeah, the other thing I just want to qualify too is I've never had a shrimp burrito until tonight. So I don't have the whole seafood burrito thing is not really something I've done. But it was good. But again, for me, I would have needed probably more sea life in it and less beans and rice. Mm-hmm. The ratio is just, I mean, thick. I mean, the burrito was like, it was like the size of a football. It's huge.
Amen.
Not bad, but I'm going to need more sea creatures.
It's like a beans and rice giant bean-filled football.
Yes, it was a lot.
Which Kevin said earlier on this podcast was his favorite burrito in Seattle.
Really? Yeah. See, I mean, everybody can have their own opinion, but I don't know if that would be within my top five. It would be in my top five seafood burritos, but that's because I've only eaten that one.
It's one out of one right now.
Yeah. So that's,
it's also your bottom five.
Yeah, it's really bottom top. It's just a really limited list. But no, it would not be in my top five burritos for the area. But it is good. It's not bad. It's just not my favorite.
Are you ready to take the L and move on?
The leader in terms of votes is not always the best choice.
Wow.
But this sets up, I think, the final that we all expected here between Asadero Prime and Tacos Chuki's, a heavyweight showdown on Wednesday night at Barboza at the Peltoncast Live, where I don't know that we'll need a deciding vote, but we'll have Jake one there is the deciding vote, but also the fan vote.
Ooh.
So be thinking, so, Ben, you'll have the ability to cast your vote along with everyone else in attendance.
Are you going to have like samples of this food?
We'll have samples of food.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't commit to this food.
I was going to say, that's a lot of carne asada, but you know, that's not a bad thing. It's just logistically difficult to bring that much beef.
I would say that we have food that's more logistically easy.
Easier to throw.
Thank you so much for going to El Camion on the last minute. I didn't even think we would need a third Pelton brother to tie break this round, but somehow we did. So thank you, Ben, for doing that.
Yeah, no problem. Anything for the show.
Whew, that was heated. Well, after that ugliness, again, Wednesday, August 29th, tomorrow, as you're hearing this, we will be crowning the champion with third Pelton brother, Jake One, who, producer extraordinaire, Jake One. And as far as I know, more of a burrito expert than you clearly are. will be helping us crown the champion of Seattle's best burrito / taco. But we should get to regularly scheduled programming because it is a big week in Seattle sports. So big of a week, I'm nervous you're going to call it the most important week in Seattle sports ever.
I'm decidedly not going to say that. First off, the Seahawks aren't playing this week, so that would probably be necessary.
Like, they next week, technically playing.
I mean, yes, but it doesn't count. Next week could potentially... Well, no, I guess there's no Husky
game.
North Dakota
game.
Yeah. All right, fine.
You're just so ready to call it every week the biggest week in Seattle sports.
I did it one time.
You want the teams of Seattle to not win a game.
Where, reminder, UW men's basketball did win at Kansas.
And that amounted to?
You know, that's not important. That's not a meaningful
That's like
part
the Mariners being up in the wild card in May.
Not exactly.
You can't take
this away from the Huskies. They still beat Kansas.
Look, the Mariners were like six games up. They had it clinched as far as we were concerned in June.
Fine. One quick note on the NBA preseason game between the Warriors and the Kings scheduled for October 5th. That game will be televised on ESPN.
There we go.
So that'll be cool to have a national audience.
I'll watch that one back-to-back live in New York, and you're not.
Wow. Wow.
Which is not going to be televised.
You'll see that. It'll be good for a national audience to see Seattle hosting its first NBA game in 10 years.
Will it?
Yeah. Okay. It'll be a solid crowd. It'll be
a preseason game. I just said to you, the Seahawks, you said the Seahawks aren't playing a game this year. And I said, technically they are. And you're like, it doesn't count. You were dismissive of a preseason game.
If it was the only game the Seahawks played in 10 years, it would matter.
This is not the Seahawks playing, though. This is the Warriors and the Kings playing.
It matters.
I
know it mattered that much, but it's still better that it'll be a good crowd than if it wasn't.
I'm out on it.
You're out on it?
Out on the preseason game. I'm in on Kevin Durant, and I think it's a great thing that he has pushed to do. But especially putting the Kings in front of us really is a slap in the face.
Look, what are you going to do?
It was the team that was stolen, the second team that was stolen from the city of Seattle. But hey, you know, they're playing a preseason game here. So it's basically like the Seahawks playing their only game in 10 years. Anyway.
Now I'm making a face at you. That's this whole podcast.
Anyway, ESPN, 7 o'clock, October 5th.
We have retired MSOT takes for the season, although may make a comeback. Never know on that one.
And you also at the Peltoncast live show.
Yes. So let's move ahead and talk about the aforementioned Seattle Sounders game on Sunday night. A thrilling 1-0 win over the Portland Timbers. Let's toast the 7th consecutive win for the Sounders, tying the MLS post shootout era record for most consecutive wins in a single season. There's like so many qualifiers on that record.
Doesn't matter.
But that's still an incredible
unbelievable. This to
what
me.
What a derby win for the Sounders.
This is the supporter shield.
Is it?
Yeah. 7 in a row. This record. This is more important than the supporter shield. Because somebody wins that every year. But somebody doesn't tie this record every year.
That is some logic.
It's just like the DVOA championship. Although somebody does win that every year.
But they don't necessarily win it 4 years in a row? 3 years in a row? However many years the Seahawks won it in a row.
More important than a Super Bowl
in our opinions. For sure.
Anyway, this was a very fun game to watch. Not a derby match, but a very fun game to watch.
Did you see, as Ben B. tweeted us, Brad Smith, Sounders' new left back, straight over from the EPL.
God, I love Brad Smith.
Calling it a derby match. And he knows because of the fact that it got heated with Brad Smith, got a yellow card.
I just love him instantly. He's wrong about whether it's a derby match, but I love Brad Smith. Is Vancouver a derby match also? Why is... See, it's actually technically Portland. Closer. It is closer to Seattle. Vancouver, mileage-wise, look this up. Mileage-wise, this is some Peltoncast geography for you, is closer to Seattle. What you are saying is this is a rivalry.
First off, I don't need to look that up.
Change kilometers to miles in Google Maps. We've all done it.
I'm granting that Vancouver is closer geographically.
Vancouver is closer, so why is that not a derby match? But Portland is. It is a rivalry match.
Because it is.
What they're saying is this is
just, you're telling Brad Smith he doesn't know what a derby match is.
He doesn't.
Wow. It's not the direction that I would choose to go with my life.
If the term derby match, which apparently it might be pronounced derby.
No, it's definitely pronounced derby.
Okay, good. If that term meant a rivalry game, then that would be accurate. But the way that I have come to understand it is two teams who play in the same city playing each other. And I crunched the numbers. I swear to God, I went to Google Maps to find out whether Seattle and Portland were the same city. I did some Peltoncast geography. Turns out they're not.
May as well be.
Wow. All right. I would never say those words.
So,
especially not on the week that we play the Timbers.
No. So the Sounders were, first off, the whole point of the derby match is that the city can be divided against itself. Cascadia can be divided against itself.
There's no person in Portland who is divided in that game. It might be they're all part of the same family because they are now our children.
Wow. The father of the week is the Sounders over the Timbers. The Sounders outplayed, quite frankly, in this match. The first half, 14 shots for the Timbers to 2 for the Sounders. Although a lot of those from long range, a lot of those blocked, few of them on goal. Not many great chances.
Yeah, I don't know if I would exactly say that the Sounders were outplayed.
They were outplayed. I mean, in terms of expected goals from 538 Soccer Power Index, it was 1.0 to 0.6 for Portland on shot-based goals, 1.8 to 1.1 on non-shot expected goals. I mean, it's not like a huge disadvantage. A point was certainly a fair result for the Sounders, but to get 3, they were very lucky. And guess what? Who, according to American Soccer Analysis, expected goals analysis, now the luckiest team in the MLS.
The Sounders?
Your Seattle Sounders.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is a long soccer season.
It is a really long season.
Man. It's almost like 2 seasons all in one.
But the Sounders, with their first win in Portland since 2014, on that own goal for the Timbers off a Kim Keehee cross, coming forward from his center back position. Probably not ill-advised coming forward, but it worked out in the end. Sounders now up to 5th in the Western Conference standings and also tied for 5th in points per match. Now up to the 2nd best rating in Soccer Power Index amongst Western Conference teams and the 3rd best point projection in the West.
Unbelievable.
88% playoff odds. Who would have seen this coming?
Man, I mean, if you're out there and you're not paying attention to the Sounders right now, change everything.
Change everything?
Everything in your life.
What if you don't live in Seattle? What if you're like a listener who's outside
Seattle? Start watching the Sounders. This derby match was huge. I've changed everything.
Wow.
This team is poised in this moment. I don't mean to get ahead of myself because we obviously got ahead of ourselves when we wrote off the season. We were talking about it being the end for Garth Lagerwey, for Brian Schmetzer, for Clint Dempsey, who it may still be.
It's the end for Clint Dempsey. He hasn't dressed for a game in 3 weeks. It's the end.
Man. Is it because of injury or because he's just not?
This isn't the day to discuss this. More than a little Ewing theory with Clint Dempsey out there. The Sounders did win the MLS Cup without him playing.
A lot better without Clint Dempsey.
It's weird. It's weird. I mean, they got to the MLS Cup with him last year, to his credit.
This team is poised to make waves in the playoffs again.
We'll find out a little bit more about how poised they are to do that this weekend, because you want to know who that one team ahead of the Sounders in SPI in the Western Conference is.
Who's that?
It's Sporting Kansas City.
Oh.
Hated rivals.
Derby match.
Throw out the records. Who is 2nd in the actual Western Conference standings, 1 point back of FC Dallas, who the Sounders beat at home a couple weeks ago. And now, Sporting KC coming to town this Saturday.
It's a derby match because the Chiefs and the Seahawks both used to be in the AFC West.
Good point. The Sounders drew 2-2 playing in Kansas City in a rare positive result back in April when the season was falling apart. Sporting KC brings in a 4-game winning streak, which would seem impressive if not for the 7-game Sounders winning streak.
Pathetic 4-game winning streak.
They are a balanced team in the top 5 in both expected goals for and expected goals against per match, according to American Soccer Analysis expected goals. Okay. So, big one.
Yeah.
Again.
It's going to be 8 in a row. Is that the record? Is the record 8?
The post-shootout single season MLS record. Because someone won 11 in a row, but it was across 2 seasons.
Oh, doesn't count at all.
Nope. Not the
same. I would never count that.
Obviously.
The offseason's so long. I don't know why you would count.
So many weeks. The Seattle Reign, playing at home against the league-leading North Carolina Courage on Saturday night, drew 1-1, a match they nearly got the full 3 points, but Courage came up with an equalizer in stoppage time. And that was bad news for the Reign, because it means now that they will have to get a result in the season finale at Portland to hold off the Thorns for 2nd place in the NWSL and a home hosting the semifinal matchup, which will be between those 2 teams, we know.
Wow.
So the
between the Thorns
and the Reign.
And the Reign.
Derby match.
Back-to-back derbies.
Yeah. That match won't be played until September 7th. There's the international break this weekend for the NWSL. So that'll be a big one, which we'll preview next week.
It's what the Peltoncast live show is going to be mostly about.
Yes. Another toast in order to the Seattle Storm, who kicked off their WNBA semifinal series against the Phoenix Mercury with a 91-87 victory on Sunday. You were at this game. What's your takeaway?
there are a lot of people who are getting way ahead of themselves.
Oh, like Todd Blywicki saying that, you know, bring home the championship.
They're on their way to a third championship. It's like, let's just be cool here, Todd Blywicki, right? He's been around professional sports franchises before.
It reminded me of 2010 when I spent the entire season when the Storm posted a 28-6 record, the best in franchise history, best in the league by a mile, spent the entire summer knocking on wood because people were constantly assuming they were going to win the championship.
Did
and
they?
I'm like, they did. But I'd seen too many times where the Seattle had the best team during the regular season and didn't win the championship. I'm not falling for that one.
The games still have to be played.
Absolutely. And this was... It was good for the Storm to get this win, I think, as a young team to, like, grit one out at the end.
Has Brianna Stewart played in the playoffs before?
They've played single elimination games in the first round the last 2 years and lost both of them. This is the first time that she or Jewel Lloyd have ever played any playoff series. I mean, Jewel Lloyd, so what happened in the fourth quarter of this game? The Storm had a 16-point lead in the third quarter, got cut down to, like, I think it was 8 going into the fourth, and it was like, uh-oh, you don't want to let Phoenix be around at the end of the game because then Diana Taurasi is going to happen,
yeah.
Which I wrote about today on ESPN.com. Sadly, not an insider article, so we don't check that bingo square, but a good article nonetheless.
Sad for you to not be behind the paywall.
No. You don't want to keep her around. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. Phoenix got within 2 with 140 left. And the Storm like kept playing up against the shot clock. They couldn't get any easy buckets. Phoenix's defense tightened up.
They don't get the ball to Brianna Stewart enough. This is my review of the Storm's offense.
But
every single time. Who'd you consider to be an NBA comparison for Brianna Stewart?
Like if Giannis shot threes?
Giannis shooting threes.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
She's the exact right height.
Yeah.
She's got the right body type. To me, she's very Kevin Durant.
It's fair. Yeah.
But it's like Kevin Durant if there's no Steph Curry or Russell
Westbrook. But she's
Russell
not quite the one-on-one player that Durant is. So I think that's, and maybe not even the honest. So I think that's part of why she doesn't get the ball at the end of games.
Because she has to work within the offense a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, it's also a little bit like, you know, Tim Duncan obviously was the best player on the Spurs for many years. But at the end of games, the ball would be in Manu Ginobili's hands.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little bit what it's like with Stewart and Jewel Lloyd.
Interesting. So she's Tim Duncan, and Jewel Lloyd is Manu.
I mean, that's and extreme comparisons in both
obviously
cases.
Obviously, Tony Parker.
Yeah, I suppose so.
All right, I guess I'll take it.
Anyway,
Brianna Stewart needs the ball more at the end of the game.
I mean, she had a huge first half in this game, coming off being awarded MVP before the game, also Subert given the Kim Perrott Sportsmanship Award for the third time, and Natasha Howard...
Just for her appearance on the Pelton cast.
Yes, all of those for that. Natasha Howard named Most Improved Player. Stewart joins Ken Griffey Jr., Ichiro, Sean Alexander, and Lauren Jackson 3 times on the short list of Seattle players to win MVP of their league.
The third of the players that I actually like. It's kind of crazy that 2 of the people from Seattle who've won MVPs are players who, I mean, you know, my feelings about Ichiro have been well documented, but then also Sean Alexander. Wow.
Yeah, those fortunately have not been as well documented on this podcast. Maybe someday.
Whew. Anyway.
So that series continues Tuesday night, tonight, presumably, as this podcast comes out.
One day
with
before
the
podcast live at Barboza.
Yeah, sadly, the team is traveling to Phoenix on Wednesday, so no Storm players are able to be part of the live show. Although maybe, just maybe, we'll hear from a member of the Storm at some point during the event.
Wow! That's a tease.
That is a tease.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Game, you do know. You just are putting it together right now. Game 3 will be on Wednesday in Phoenix, or on Friday rather in Phoenix. It's not a back-to-back. Friday in Phoenix. Game 4, if necessary, on Sunday. And if it comes to that, a deciding Game 5 of the series next Tuesday at Key Arena. Hopefully it doesn't come to that, given Diana Taurasi's 13-0 career record in single elimination games. All right, anyway, an exciting game. So hope you can make it out to Game 2, and if there is a Game 5... to that one. All right. Now we wrap things up by talking Husky football. As we learned last week when I did the math correctly, it's game week for the Huskies.
Oh my God.
And it's not, you know, Eastern Washington is not walking through that door. North Dakota is not walking through that door. Instead, the Huskies headed to Atlanta this Saturday to face number 9 Auburn in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. The marquee game of the weekend between two top 10 teams on ABC. Are you ready for this?
Not even in the slightest.
This is I'm not a big fan of opening the game with a season with a big game.
Oh my God.
I like to ease into the schedule.
Yeah.
There's no preseason.
There's no you don't know what you got.
I mean, I don't know that I would say this is the most important game of the season for UW football because they can afford to lose this game and still bounce back from it.
Stanford is probably still, as of this moment, the most important game.
But it's a really important game. I mean, the one thing I've been thinking about lately is like what's, you know, as much as Husky fans bristle at the criticism of the non-conference schedule in recent years, what's the best non-conference win for the Huskies in the Coach Pete era?
The best non-conference win...
I mean, it's either Oklahoma State in, what was that bowl game again?
That wasn't a bad one.
The Heart of Dallas. Zaxby's Heart of Dallas.
Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl. God, that was a big win. Big win.
It's either that or Illinois at Illinois or Rutgers, one of the Rutgers wins. Those wow. Or Fresno State last year. I guess that's the other option. Fresno yeah. State did prove to be a good team.
Yeah, ESPN.
Suffice it
ESPN
to say.
ESPN did not really respect that
suffice
one.
But, okay, to
what
say,
are the opportunities that they've had? When you think about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, that'd be, the schedule hasn't been very good. It's been mostly in bowl games.
Non-conference during the regular season, non-bowl games or whatever, right? Have they lost any notable non-conference games?
I mean, they did lose at Boise State at the start of the 2015 season, but...
Coach Pete's first year?
That was his second year. Jake Browning's first start.
Okay, Jake Browning's first start as a true freshman in the first game of the season.
Missed a field goal at the end
of that game. Which they were competitive in. Like, it was
not a bad performance.
And then you've got... Alabama and Penn State.
But you still don't have that flag win where you can plant your flag and say, hey, we beat this team.
We plant our flag by scoring 70 points on Oregon.
That doesn't have
the
same
impact nationally. Oh, my God. Where are you looking to plant your flag?
the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That's precisely.
I mean, that would be a great place to plant the flag. But still, going into USC when they had so much hype, winning on that Thursday night, that was a huge game. This team has won games.
It hasn't. I'm not saying it hasn't won. I mean, look, they got to a New Year's Six
Jesus
game each of the last 2 years. I'm just saying this would be a statement.
Did they
the
need to score 100 against Oregon for you? Yes, I agree. This is a big game. They just, of the opportunities, the three losses, they only have three non-conference losses in the Coach Pete era, right?
That sounds like it checks out. They did hold on to beat Hawaii in 2014.
That was, I mean, really, that Rutgers game last year was nerve-wracking. Without that Dante Pettis return touchdown, that's actually the thing that is making me most nervous about going into this game because I have a lot of faith that Chris Peterson is going to have the team ready. We always look back to, I think this was Nebraska in a non-conference game, like 1999 or so.
I mean, there were multiple in there, but you're thinking of the Brock Heward senior or junior year?
There was one year where there was a lot of hype around the Huskies, and they went at Nebraska and got destroyed.
I mean, I'm thinking of a game that was played here, I believe, in 1997 that they lost.
I think that's earlier than the one that I'm thinking of. But there were a lot of coaches during that era in the post-Don James. We'll consider it the post-John James pre-Coach Pete eras. There were teams with a lot of expectations that didn't necessarily meet those expectations.
That is reasonable to say.
Chris Peterson is the one coach since Don James that I have faith that the team is going to be ready to play this game this weekend.
Yeah, but so is Auburn. And Auburn is good.
I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to win. I'm just saying I don't think it's going to be the type of situation where they're going to go out and get destroyed. So tell us about Auburn.
1997, they lost at home to Nebraska. And I'm going to assume then, yeah, the next year they were number 9 going into that game and lost 55-7 to number 2 Nebraska in Lincoln.
I do not think the Huskies are going to lose 55-7. But this is on a neutral site, though. So, you know, like, I mean, it'll be probably 50% Husky fans.
Yeah. So Gus Malzahn is beginning his 6th year as Auburn head coach after helping lead the team to the 2011 national championship with Cam Newton as quarterback, although Malzahn did not technically coach the BCS championship that year after taking the Arkansas State head coaching job. He returned as head coach a year later and led Auburn to the BCS championship game in his first year as head coach. Then you had three kind of down years. Won the SEC West last year, lost to Georgia in the SEC championship game after beating both Georgia and Alabama in the regular season, and would say that UW and Auburn, if you look at most of the statistical rankings, they were almost neck and neck last season, depending on, you know, kind of which one you favor. They lose their starting running back, Kerryon Johnson, who was a second-round pick by the Lions and the SEC Offensive Player of the Year, but return 8 starters on offense and more than half of their starting defense. So this is a test, and it starts at quarterback with Jarrett Stidham, who ranked 39th in the country last year in QBR. He completed 67% of his passes for 8.5 yards per attempt with 6 interceptions and 370 attempts. All those numbers pretty similar to Jake Browning.
They sound really good. Wait, are you sure? Because I thought Jake was being benched for another Jake.
Yeah, it turns out Jake Browning also very good. The one big difference between them that came out in QBR, where Jake Browning ranked higher than Stidham, is sacks, which is interesting. Auburn was sacked 36 times as a team that's not split out by the individual quarterback. The Huskies were sacked 20 times last season. Really? So Auburn's minus 24 point, or Stidham rather, this going back to him individually, his minus 24.1 expected points added on sacks were the third most of any quarterback in the country. So that'll be interesting to see if UW can get after him in this one. With Kerryon Johnson's departure, junior Cam Martin is expected to start at running back. He averaged 6.1 yards per carry in a reserved role last season. Stidham can run a little bit. He, you know, had a bunch of yards against Alabama, most notably, but not a huge threat on the ground. Had 153 rushing yards total, although
that
obviously
includes the sacks, though.
Yes, with college football, he lost several hundred yards on sacks.
That
I mean,
actually
still
sounds like a pretty good running quarterback.
That's still like 30 yards per game, I'd bet, when you take out the sacks. I mean, he can do it, but it's not a primary component of the offense.
It's not Khalil Tate here,
and it's not Trace McSorley, most notably.
Oh God,
yeah, still nightmares about that one. Ryan Davis was Auburn's most targeted receiver by a wide margin with 84 catches last season. Nobody else had more than 29. He's very much a possession receiver, averaging just 9.7 yards per catch. Their other boundary receiver, Darius Slayton, is more of the big play threat. He averaged 22.2 yards per catch. So that's a lot. Defensively, they lost their leading pass rush threat in Jeff Holland, who had 9.5 sacks last season. Nobody else on Auburn had more than 4. They didn't force a particularly high number of turnovers for a top defense, just 1.4 per game, the same number as they committed on offense, but held opponents to 54.2% completions on passes and 6.0 yards per attempt, which was the 7th lowest in college football last year, in Division I at least. UW was 14th in that same category at 6.1 yards per attempt allowed. 7th.
And UW was 14th?
Yeah. So this is a matchup where, you know, I think you go through all the numbers, you look at it. Because of the fact that UW has more returning players than Auburn, they're generally considered a slightly better team by the statistical projections and by, you know, the AP rank and coaches poll, where both of these teams are 6th and 9th respectively. But yet, nonetheless, Auburn is favored by 1.5 in this game, was previously 2.5 points.
It's a
semi-home game. Yeah, it's not a neutral site game at all.
If this game was in Seattle, the Huskies would be favored.
Oh, for sure.
Or if it was in Los Angeles, or if it was in Portland, or wherever.
Well, I hesitate to break out Peltoncast geography again and try to come up with what's equidistant between Seattle and Auburn, Alabama.
As far as major cities?
No, I think it's probably Denver.
Denver? No. I mean, just culturally, Atlanta is very much an Auburn city.
Yeah, obviously. Whereas they're going to have a lot more fans there.
Denver is not, it's not easy to travel to Denver from Seattle.
But it's not easy to travel to Denver. I mean, maybe Salt Lake City, I guess, if you want to go down the west coast side of the mountains.
How many miles is it from Auburn to Atlanta? I think it's closer than you're saying.
I'm saying, what if there was a completely neutral site, not what if there was an equivalent of this to Seattle.
If there was a completely neutral site. I thought you were saying there was an equivalent. Okay, if there was a completely neutral site, it would be like Minneapolis.
I guess that'd be pretty good.
Chicago.
It's a 2-hour drive from Auburn's stadium to Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Okay, well, so that's what I was saying. It's basically Portland.
If this game was in Portland,
there'd be tons of Husky fans there. We would be there.
I mean, I would not be there because, sadly, I am going to be attending a wedding this weekend. Otherwise, I might be in Atlanta for this
game. Do you have people
who
are going?
Huh?
Do you have people who are going?
Not any of my close friends that are going.
Oh. The Nate Tyler crew couldn't make it out?
Actually, I don't know if they're going. They might be. I guess we'll find out at the live show.
But yeah, it would be like Chicago, Denver, Minneapolis, something like that. If they were a true neutral site, I suppose the Huskies would probably be favored by about a point.
I think Denver works. I think Denver's pretty reasonable, actually.
But just in the world, there are more Auburn fans probably in the world than there are Husky fans. So in a true neutral site, it would probably still slightly favor Auburn. Anyway, I mean, this is a terrifying game because you look at it on paper, they look like very similar teams. The Huskies do return a lot of starters, but are still missing your top pass rusher, Vita Vea.
Yeah.
They're not missing their top running back, but they are losing Dante Pettis. You know, they're losing Will Disley, like a mid-round draft pick in the NFL. You squint about that, but also have, what's his name, the tight end who's injured.
Oh, Hunter Bryant?
Oh, God.
Which, the good news is it sounds like Hunter Bryant is basically the only Husky of note who's going to miss this game due to injury. Like, everyone who is not long-term injured is healthy at this point coming out of fall camp, which is a good sign.
I just cried a single tear for Hunter Bryant. Drew Sample has so much experience at tight end. You know, they have experienced players, the offensive line in particular. Like, you look at that, that is going to be a huge factor in this game. I don't mean to harp on this, but lines matter so much in these games. And I think having a team with this big, big Auburn defensive line, this offensive line is going to be huge. And bringing back so many experienced players, they'll be ready to play. But Auburn's really in the same boat.
Yeah, and they lost a couple of starting offensive linemen. Those were, you know, maybe their most notable losses on offense besides at running back.
And do we think that these sacks that were taken are because of the line or because of holding the ball for too long?
I probably didn't watch enough Auburn football to want to
say last year. You've done some pretty extensive film breakdowns.
I mean, I watched the SEC championship game against Georgia. I can't say I remember it at this point.
That's gone from my mind. But going into this game, you have to feel confident in the Huskies. The only thing that would make you not feel confident is just the location and the travel, because it's very far away from Seattle.
It sure is. And just, you know, the uncertainty of playing an opening game under these conditions. Like, it is interesting. I mean, there was once the theory that, you know, Coach Pete did unusually well in bowl games and opening games.
Times that he had a long time to prepare for the games.
Right. And I looked at that and it turned out not really to be true. It just turned out that his teams at Boise State were good all the time. And those were the times where they played good opponents.
Yes.
Was either they'd play, you know, like Virginia Tech in one of the marquee
Virginia
games
Tech,
on opening
Oregon. Game.
Right. Or they'd play someone in a bowl game because they actually let them play a real
opponent.
They were
just good teams.
Yeah. They did really well against their WAC opponents or Mountain West, you know, wherever they were. It just, you couldn't tell that because
Let's
the fact that those opponents were so bad.
Go ahead and assume that Coach Bean is really good when he has a long time to prepare. Because that makes me feel better going into Saturday.
I mean, the Rutgers and Hawaii openers don't necessarily speak to
that. That's what makes me feel a little bit more nervous about this one.
I mean, but look, I mean, Auburn is going through the same thing here. And probably the greater number of parts you need to replace. And last year, UW had lost a lot more talent.
I really think an offensive line is a big deal. Bringing back the Huskies bringing back their full offensive line? Did they lose anybody?
I think they might have lost one starter to graduation. I think so.
But you look through it and you're like, these are all the names that I recognize, right? I mean, across the board, the line all has tons of experience. Even if they did lose a starter, whomever it was definitely got, who's subbing in, got a lot of playing time. Who did they lose?
They lost like the right guard. It's like
Andrew Kirkland.
Yeah.
But they've got Jesse Sosabe going right in there, right? Who definitely played. Anyway, bringing back an experienced line is a big deal, I think. Bringing back an experienced secondary is a big deal. I mean, this team is poised to have an excellent season. They have a very difficult opponent in week one, and I really don't think we know what to expect.
No, I mean, you know, I expect a really good game. I mean, I think that's the main thing I expect, I guess I would say.
But the magnitude of that game is so huge. I mean, really what this means, I was looking at previews today from various ESPN analysts, and it's like, where is game day going to be? Are they going to be in Atlanta?
I haven't heard that they are, so I don't know.
That's kind of crazy to me, and maybe it's because it's a neutral site that they wouldn't be there. But this is the game of the week. This is the game that could decide whether the Huskies, we don't know, we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but whether the Huskies are Pac-12 champions.
South Bend is Notre Dame hosts Michigan.
All right, that's a good game too.
Yeah.
Or and play in the Rose Bowl or whatever, or competing in the Pac-12 championship, or whether they're considered as college football playoff contenders.
I mean, I think the other thing that's notable here, you know, above and beyond just the statement aspect of a non-conference win, is the fact that this game is being played at 12:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Eastern. There's going to be a lot more eyes on it than the classic Pac-12 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern starts.
Oh, my God.
So... this is a big one.
Oh my God. I'm not in regular season mode yet.
I know. Are you even ready to do chances of victory?
I'm ready to do chances of victory. But before then, I just want to say the good thing is that this game, I don't like the idea of having this game happen in week one. I would prefer the team to have 2 weeks, but I would love for them to play BYU and North Dakota before then and then gear up to this in week three when things are kind of rolling into gear much better. But losing a game, should they lose in week one, is the best week to lose a game.
And especially to a top 10 opponent. I mean, it's not going to be held against you in the same way. Now, they'd still not have, you know, much less margin for error in their conference schedule if that were to happen in the other two non-conference games. So if they lose to North Dakota, then the season is over. I'm declaring that.
Wow.
Yeah. But no, I feel you. I hear you on that one.
So, I mean, that is the positive of playing this game in week one. That said, chances of victory as the Huskies go to Atlanta and face Auburn in a matchup of top 10 teams?
I'm going to go with 45%.
I have the exact same.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the logical play. Again, you know, maybe Huskies a slight edge on a neutral field, but this is not going to be neutral.
If you're going to be gone. If the Huskies win, I was going to say, are we emergency potting?
You're not even going to be there. I'm going to be very busy at that point, as I will be at the wedding.
You'll be walking down the aisle.
I'm not going to be walking down the
throwing the flowers to each side.
No. None of those things are going to happen.
Wow.
Going to be eating a lot.
How are you? Are you going to be able to watch the game?
Yeah, because the wedding doesn't start until, I think, 4:30, so... It'll be a little. I hope the game is played quickly.
Man, oh, you know what? The one thing I know about college football games,
they tend to play quick.
They're often played quickly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The MLS season is short. College football games are played quickly. These are the two things I know.
I mean, it should be done by the time the wedding starts. I just may not be able to watch the last.
I'm missing
minutes.
Everything for this.
Because you're going to be a bummer shoot?
No. I'm not doing any of those things.
Oh.
Any prior engagement I have is canceled.
Yeah, that's a reasonable
thing. Playing fucking Auburn. I mean, come on. Like, even the opportunity is fun. We talked about this last year playing Penn State. It's like the opportunity to play against Penn State is fun, and it was.
Was it? I didn't think it was that fun.
Not really, actually. There's nothing fun about that game.
It's fun if you win. Alabama was fun in the playoff.
Also not fun.
Yeah, you know, because the fact that it was just, we were happy just to be there.
It was an honor just to be nominated.
This
season is not a happy to be there season. This is Jake Brandon's senior year.
I agree.
This is Miles Gaskin's senior year. This is an experienced team with an experienced line that is not happy to be there. They need to win this game. And if they do, they skyrocket in the polls all the way from 6 to probably 4.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that would be.
But the general perception about the team is that they will be a team who's poised to go to the college football playoff if they win this game.
But we'll cross that bridge if and when we get there.
But not immediately after.
No. No, if this is all a few days after. Next week's regularly scheduled pod. All right, on that note, hope we see everyone on Wednesday at the live show, at least the listener who's in Seattle.
I'm so nervous about so many things. Anyway, thanks for listening.
Thanks.